You're listening to the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
Welcome into the Pipeline Podcast. Tim McMaster here along with Jim Callis, Jonathan Mayo of MLBPipeline.com, and the lists have begun. I know this is a favorite time of year for a lot of people who follow prospects in Major League Baseball, as you guys have started to put together these top 10 lists per position before we eventually get to the top 100 and then top 30s for every team in Major League Baseball. But as we sit here, the top 10 right-handed pitchers and the top 10 left-handed pitchers have been released. Jonathan, if you could just kind of fill people in on what you guys do to come up with these lists, because you're not just kind of throwing these together. A lot goes into this.
Jim has a large Ouija board. A lot goes into it. It really stems from the work that we put into doing the top 100 list, which will come out on January 29th, shameless plug. We will all come up with our own, myself and Jim and Mike Rosenbaum, our third member of our merry band of misfits. And then we'll kind of combine them, tweak it a little bit, and then we'll send it out for feedback to scouts, executives, scouting directors that we all know, and then we'll tweak it from there. And then from that, we are able to sort of parse it out into the top 10 by position lists. Obviously, not all of the lists are full of top 100 guys, so then we have to kind of drill down a little bit deeper and figure it out from there. But that's the process in a nutshell.
All right, well, let's dig into the right-handed pitchers list. If you want to see the full top 10, of course, you can check it out on MLBPipeline.com. We're going to kind of go through some of the highlights of the list. And Jim, I know you wrote the story for the right-handed pitchers, so I'm going to start with you, and let's start at the top. I don't think it comes as any surprise that Lucas Giolito of the Washington Nationals is your number one righty.
No, and I don't think I'm giving anything away by telling people that he's the number one pitcher overall in baseball. I mean, it's an easy choice. I mean, he's got the best stuff in the minors. He's got a fastball that sits in the mid-90s. It's hit 100 miles an hour. His curveball's one of the best in the minors as well. He's got an advanced changeup. He throws a lot of strikes. He's got, size on his side also. He's 6'6". He's, I think, a very cerebral pitcher. If you're looking at Lucas Giolito, I don't know what the red flag would be other than the medical history a little bit, because he injured his elbow in 2012 in high school, cost him a chance to be the first high school right-hander ever go number one overall. Had Tommy John surgery that year, and he's been fine since. So I don't think there's concerns. I mean, the one concern would be, I guess, how long does Tommy John surgery last? But, the Nationals have handled him very carefully, and I would think we'd see him in the big leagues at some point this season. The Nationals have tried to advance him with caution and treat him gingerly, but he's at the point, I think they're at the point, where it's time to cut him loose and see what he could do in the big leagues, and I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him up even sooner than expected this year.
The Nationals have had such success taking guys who were injured heading into the draft and having faith in I guess their medical team and guys to turn these guys around. It's happened so much. Anthony Rendon, another guy who slipped a little bit to them, and he's been so good for the Nationals. All right, number two on the list, Jonathan, is Tyler Glasnow of your hometown Pittsburgh Pirates.
Are you calling me a homer?
It just happened to work out that you get to talk about the Pirates.
As luck would have it, number two on the list is a guy from here in Pittsburgh. And Glasnow is one of these guys. When he was drafted back in 2011, was this really tall, gangly, thin, and raw pitcher, throwing kind of upper 80s, touching 91, 92. And the Pirates saw a lot of projection in him, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, and it's really worked with him. And he now sits in the mid to upper 90s. He's got the chance to be a top of the rotation starter as well. He's not Giolito in terms of the polish, but in terms of the fastball and breaking ball combination, it's somewhat comparable. His changeup has improved a good amount as well. What happened last year is he missed time with an ankle injury. When he came out back, he was having trouble with locating his curveball, which he'd been really working on. So it forced him to throw his changeup more. So it was kind of a blessing in disguise. So his changeup has now improved. The only thing that holding him back has been command. Walk rate is still a little high, that he misses a ton of bats. He's probably been one of the toughest pitching prospects to hit over the last few years. His batting average against and hit rates are always crazy, along with the strikeout rates. And I think he's another guy that we're going to see in the big leagues at some point in 2016.
A few years ago, it seemed like it was going to be Jameson Taillon coming up for the Pirates and then Tyler Glasnow down the road as the next guy. But because of injury, we still haven't seen Taillon in Pittsburgh. Is Glasnow going to beat him to the major leagues?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. I think Taillon beats him. A lot of that depends on how Taillon comes out and pitches. But there, yeah, I mean, Glasnow's certainly gone past him on prospect radars, and it'll be pretty close, I think. In terms of that, but both will be probably in a Triple A rotation. That should be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, that's going
to
be
interesting to see what happens with those guys, Jonathan. Because even before Taillon got hurt, as you alluded to, you know, Glasnow misses bats maybe about as easily as any pitcher in the minors. You know, guys just swing and miss at the fastball, even, you know, when it's in the zone, can't seem to catch up to it. And, you know, Taillon was the more famous guy, the number two overall pick in the draft. And as good as he is, and I still think, you know, his future is very promising, you know, coming back from Tommy John isn't too worrisome. You know, that was kind of maybe the biggest knock on Taillon is, for all his stuff, he didn't miss as many bats as you thought he might. So I'll be very curious to see how that plays out in the long term in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and combining those two guys with Gerrit Cole, it's going to be a lot of fun in Pittsburgh as far as that rotation goes. All right, I want you guys to touch on another guy from this top 10 that you like a lot. Jim, let's start with you.
Yeah, I'll go with Carson Fulmer. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, this is a talented list, and you know, we have I think 29 or 30 right-handers on the overall top 100. So there's plenty of interesting right-handers. But you know, I thought Carson Fulmer was the best college pitcher in last year's draft, best pitcher in last year's draft. He wound up being the third one selected, going to White Sox at number 8 overall. But yeah, just very impressive to watch him the last 2 years at the College World Series. He was the best starter on Vanderbilt's College World Series championship team in 2014, and he was the best starter on their College World Series runner-up team in 2015, led Division I with 14 wins, second with 167 strikeouts. I think this guy's going to move as fast as Chris Sale and Carlos Rodon did with the White Sox. He's going to rocket to the big leagues very, very quickly. He's got a mid-90s fastball. He's got a power curveball. His changeup's probably average third pitch. And, you know, the knocks on Carson Fulmer, there's two knocks on him. He's not the biggest guy in the world. He's about 6 feet tall. And he's got a high-tempo delivery that sometimes costs him some control and command. And, you know, the scouts look at the size and they look at the tempo and the delivery. Some scouts do. And think, okay, that guy needs to be a reliever because he's not going to hold up. But I will say, you know, since he became a starter, in Vanderbilt had a loaded staff. A lot of staffs, he would have been a starter as a freshman. But since he became a starter midway through his sophomore year, he brought that quality stuff, that plus-plus fastball, that plus curve, start after start after start. I mean, he's very athletic. He's very competitive. He doesn't have a problem maintaining his stuff into the late innings, even though he's not the biggest guy, and there's a lot of effort in his delivery. I think this guy's going to be a number two starter. And, everybody we've talked about so far, we've talked about being in the big leagues this year. I mean, more realistically, you'd probably say 2017 for Carson Fulmer. But if they want him, I wouldn't be surprised if the White Sox somehow sneak into contention or need a pitcher. We might see Carson Fulmer at the end of 2016.
And he certainly knows winning, going all the way to the College World Series Finals 2 years in a row there at Vanderbilt. All right, Jonathan, who else do you really – I know you guys like all these guys, but who else would you like to talk about in this top 10?
Well, you know, we went with the really tall right-handers right off the bat, and you know, then he went Carson Fulmer, so I'll go Jose Berrios of the Twins, another guy who we will see in Minnesota in 2016. In fact, the Twins seriously considered bringing him up for the stretch run late last year and just decided against it in terms of his long-term future. He'd thrown enough innings, and even though he's not the biggest guy in the world, he's very athletic. He's stronger than you would think, so durability is not going to be a question. And he doesn't have the pure raw stuff of a Giolito or a Glasnow, but he's got plenty of stuff, and he knows how to pitch. And probably more than anything, along with a very good three-pitch mix, is he is unbelievably competitive. He pitches with a chip on his shoulder, which I think you see a lot of times from guys who are a little bit undersized. They're told at various times that they're you know, they're not big enough to start, or they can't do this or that. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, he is going to be, at the very least, a middle-of-the-rotation guy. But I think he has a chance to be kind of more of a front-line guy when all is said and done.
And that's really what this Twins team, I think, needs when you look at how many steps, how far they came last year, but they don't have that top-of-the-rotation kind of starter. So if Berrios could do that, it would be huge for that turnaround in Minnesota. All right, how about some guys that didn't make the top 10, but maybe were right there and you guys considered? Jim, let's start with you.
Yeah, I actually had Francis Martez of the Astros is one of my top 10 right-handers overall. But mean Jonathan and Mike didn't back me on that, so he just missed the top 10. And he intrigues me more as much as about just about any prospect in the minors, because a year ago, or I should say 2 years ago, mid-2014, he's in the Gulf Coast League with the Marlins. The Astros did a tremendous job of asking for him, knowing who he was, and getting him in the Jarrett Cozart deal. And you fast forward a year later, he's in Double A at age 19. His fastball's up to the mid-90s and touching 98. His curveball's one of the best in the minor leagues. His changeup's showing strides. He's throwing a lot more strikes. I mean, all of a sudden, this guy looks like a frontline starter. Nobody heard of him the year before. And I really do think that his emergence was a big part of the reason why the Astros felt comfortable trading Vincent Velasquez and Mark Appel in the deal to get Ken Giles. I mean, both of those guys are very good young pitchers, but Martez has a higher ceiling, and he's made so much progress jumping from rookie ball to Double A in a year that he could be in the big leagues, you know, at some point this year perhaps if needed, you know, and definitely next year. I'm curious to see, you know, is this for real? Can he continue to get better? He developed so much last year. You know, just a very, very intriguing guy.
And we started this conversation talking about Lucas Giolito. And, of course, a lot of people realize he was on the same team with Max Fried in high school. But, Jonathan, there was another pitcher on that Harvard-Westlake team as well, right?
You're diving into your NHSI history there, Tim. That's very impressive. Yes, Flaherty was a sophomore third baseman and pitcher when Giolito and Fried were seniors. And it was actually Flaherty who stepped up big time at the NHSI. Giolito wasn't pitching. He was already out with that elbow injury. Fried was there. Flaherty kind of put himself on the map as a pitcher and then kept going. And what kind of intrigues me about him is that he's always had a kind of bizarrely advanced feel for pitching, given the fact that he was also a position player. The stuff is kind of doesn't jump out at you. It's good across the board, a tick above average across the board, but he really knows how to pitch. And there's some upside. You know, he's tall, he's projectable, he's going to add more strength, so there might be more velocity. So, you know, right now he's not a top 10 right-handed pitching prospect, but if you told me at this time next year or maybe even 2 years from now that he'd be on that group, I'd believe it, because I think there's more to come. And he's already got that foundation of really, really excellent command and knowing how to mix his pitches extremely well.
Yet another arm in that Cardinals system, and a guy we didn't talk about, number three on the right-handers list, Alex Reyes, another Cardinals arm. They just keep coming out of that St. Louis organization. All right, let's switch things over to the lefties now, the top 10 left-handed pitchers also available on MLBpipeline.com. And, Jonathan, I'm going to start with you on this one. You wrote the article for this story, and Julio Urias, another one, no surprise, but he's still such a youngster, and he's your number one lefty.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing to think that he is still a teenager. I feel like we've been talking about him for a while. But, you know, the word that I think has been used the most to describe him is precocious, and I think it fits. I mean, he's done well at pretty much every level. Last year, he had two starts at AAA that he wasn't his usual masterful self, but I think you can forgive him that, given that he was pitching at 18, pitched extremely well in Double A. The only thing he doesn't have is a ton of innings. The Dodgers have been really careful. He missed a couple of months last year as he had surgery to correct an issue with his eye. So he hasn't thrown more than 100 innings in any given year, and that's the only thing that's probably holding him back. You know, Jim has kind of, over the last couple of years, talked about how the Dodgers could have called him up and either of the last 2 years to help out of the bullpen. His stuff is that good, but stuff and command and just the mound presence that far belies his years, makes him the most, he's the best left-handed pitching prospect. In a lot of ways, he's the most intriguing pitching prospect, period, just because of how young he is and how quickly he's come.
Number two on the list, Jim, is Blake Snell. And I think Blake Snell kind of got on everybody's radar, even people that don't necessarily cover the minor leagues or follow the minor leagues as closely as others, with the start of last season when he went 46 scoreless innings.
Yeah, when you put up 46 scoreless innings in a row, people tend to notice that, and he kept it going. You know, he started the year in high A, got to triple A, led the minors, had that nice head start, wound up leading the minors with a 1.41 ERA. You know, what's nice about Blake Snell from the Rays' perspective is the Rays had, a record number of early-round draft picks in 2011, and it doesn't look like they're really going to capitalize on that much, with the possible exceptions of Snell and maybe Taylor Guerrero. But, he has very good stuff for a lefty or even a righty, I should say. I mean, it's, he'll sit around 92, 94 with fastball. It's extremely lively. Guys have trouble squaring it up. His slider misses bats. His changeup got a lot better last year. His stuff has a lot of life on it. At times he struggles to throw it for strikes. He got better last year. I think that's still the biggest thing he needs. I think he could make the Rays out of spring training, depending on what they want to do with their rotation. Could go back to AAA for a little bit more of a tune-up. But, I mean, this guy, I don't think there's many players who boosted their stock as much as Blake Snell did in 2015. Coming into the year, he had a good arm, but he didn't really seem to harness it, and last year it really, really came together for him. His stuff improved, the control and command improved. The Rays have got to be excited about this guy.
All right, Jonathan, who's another guy on this lefty list that you really like?
I'll take projectable left-handers for 1,000. I'm going to go with Cody Reed now with the Reds. He came to the Reds from the Royals in the Johnny Cueto trade, and much like Snell, he's a guy that when he was drafted, you had to dream on. It really started to come together this past season. First the chunk of it with the Royals, and then even after the deadline when he made it over to the Reds, he pitched extremely well, has made it to AA. His stuff has picked up as he's gotten bigger and stronger. I think that, yes, Johnny Cueto helped the Royals win a world championship, but it may be looked back in one of these this might be the kind of trade that you look back and realize, wow, they gave up an extremely good starting pitcher in Cody Reed when all said and done. Now, the Reds, are in rebuilding mode. There's no need to rush him to the big leagues. At the same time, he's not that far away from being able to help out. I think he's another one of these guys that we'll probably see at some point in 2016, unless the Reds decide they just don't want to get his clock started. But, we're talking about a guy with three above average to plus pitches. His command has improved tremendously. Another guy who gets high marks for his competitiveness on the mound. I think it's going to be exciting to see. He probably profiles maybe as a number three starter, but like with a lot of these guys that we've talked about today, because of the upside potential, you don't necessarily want to limit what you think he can be when all is said and done.
And, Jim, you like another guy who was also traded at the deadline in 2015.
Yeah, and I think I've already apologized to Jonathan for doubting him on a previous podcast. But when Jonathan went out to the Arizona Fall League right at the beginning of the season, and he told me he saw Josh Hader touch 98 miles an hour, I was like, come on. Josh Hader's got a good arm, but I'm not claiming you're lying to me, but I can't believe 98 unless I see it with my own eyes. And I went out to the Arizona Fall League, and I saw Josh Hader touch 98 with my own eyes, and he was – outside of Alex Reyes, the best pitching prospect in the Fall League. He got some Chris Sale and Madison Bumgarner comparisons. He's a low slot lefty, but he was 94-98. He had one of the better sliders in the league. He was death on left-handers and tough on righties, just even though they got a better look at him. Nobody was really hitting that guy at all. I think the question is, He hasn't ever piled up a ton of innings in the season. What's his stuff going to look like as a starter, when he gets around the 200-inning mark of a big league season? But, it was impressive watching him out there, and impressive for the Brewers. I mean, this guy was supposed to be the third-best prospect in that Carlos Gomez-Mike Fiers deal, after Brett Phillips and Domingo Santana. And, it was funny. I was talking to an Astros official at the winter meetings, and I forget how Hader's name came up, and he said, obviously, we made the trade, we were all in, we're trying to win. you know, and no regrets about doing that. But he said, you know, we need a lefty reliever right now. And if we still had Josh Hader, you know, based on he'd seen him in the fall league too, Josh Hader could probably help us in the big leagues right now as a lefty reliever. And, you know, we'd be in a little bit of a quandary. Do we have this guy come up and help the big league team right now? I mean, this guy could be a wipeout reliever in short stints, or will we continue to develop him as a starter? And, you know, unfortunately for the Astros, they don't have that dilemma because he's a Brewer now. But, you know, he's one of many reasons. I think the Brewers probably have baseball's most improved farm system compared to a year ago at this time.
Yeah, they really did a tremendous job at the deadline and beyond since a year ago. All right, how about a couple of guys that aren't on this top 10 list? Jonathan, I'll start with you.
Yeah, and I'll take another team whose farm system I think has improved a lot, not necessarily because of, you know, huge trades like the Brewers, but the Indians' farm system for a long time was kind of bereft of impact talent, and they've come a long way. And one of the guys that I want to talk about is a guy they did get via trade, and that's Rob Kaminsky, and they got from the St. Louis Cardinals in the Brandon Moss trade. And you know, not the biggest guy in the world, not the biggest stuff in the world, but really knows how to pitch, and the stuff is good enough. We're not talking about a guy who's, you know, a soft tosser. The stuff will be plenty good enough. I see him as a, you know, really solid number three or four starter, and a guy who's probably going to continue to move pretty quickly from the New Jersey high school ranks. Got to give a shout out to the Garden State when I can, of course. And he came over. He pitched well for the Indians after the trade. And you know, I think most people looked at that trade and thought that the Indians had done extremely well to get that kind of return. As Kaminsky's kind of been a borderline top 100 guy for the last year now, to get a guy of that caliber, that young, I think was a very good guess. It's only going to become obviously more beneficial once he gets to the big leagues in another year or so.
And Jim, the Indian system, nobody in this top 10, but man, they have a lot of good lefties, don't they?
They do. I was prepared to talk about Justice Sheffield, a first-round pick from 2014 who's kind of flown under the radar despite a very good first full pro season in the Midwest League. And then I realized there was another lefty who merited talking about, and that's Brady Aiken. You know, famous as the number one overall pick in the 2014 draft, failed a physical after agreeing to terms, and wound up becoming only the third number one overall pick not to sign. In draft history, you know, winds up going to IMG Academy to pitch for the postgraduate team. He hurts his elbow in his first start, has Tommy John surgery less than a week later, winds up going 17th overall in the draft. And if this guy gets back to where he was in 2014, then that's an absolute steal because, you know, Brady Aiken, you know, had it all. I mean, he's kind of, you know, we've been talking about tall pitchers, and there's a lot of thought, you know, a lot of scouts I talk to, I'm sure Jonathan hears the same thing. I mean, when you have those super tall pitchers, it's great because it's a different, difficult angle and downhill plane to hit. But, like, the taller you are, you have a lot of moving parts, and it's maybe harder to control the delivery. So, I think most scouts would tell you the ideal size for pitchers is 6'3", 6'4". That's what Brady Aiken is. He's very athletic. He's a lefty who had a fastball hit 97. He had a plus curveball. He had a plus changeup. He had a track record of performing very well with Team USA. He threw a ton of strikes. I mean, there were really no red flags on this guy until he failed the physical because of concerns about his elbow that proved valid when he had Tommy John surgery. But again, you know, you can't take it for granted. I mean, not every guy comes back from Tommy John surgery to where he was before, but so many guys do. And if he does, the Indians basically got a guy who, had Brady Aiken been healthy and shown what he had shown the year before, you know, would have probably been the best prospect in the 2015 draft, and they got him in the middle of the round. I like the gamble. I think he's just recently gotten back on a mound. I'm sure he'll be on a very limited innings count this year. But, I mean, this is a guy who, you know, a year from now could be the best left-hander, you know, in the minor leagues. You know, maybe when we're having the discussion a year from now, he might be number one on the list.
Great stuff on all these arms. And the coolest thing about this, I think, is how many of these guys we're going to see in the major leagues. during the 2016 season. So that's a quick rundown of your right-handers, your left-handers, but the top 10 lists continue to roll on MLBpipeline.com. Catchers come out today, Thursday, followed by through next week, first baseman, then second baseman, then third baseman, shortstops, finally outfielders next Thursday, followed by the top 100 list next Friday. So lots of lists still to come on MLBpipeline.com. That's going to do it for our Pipeline podcast for this week. For Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, I'm Tim McMaster. Guys, thanks a lot.